I forgot, too, what I'd put up there. You know, I would, if it's not too late, like to change that and say, ask Blaine Kelly who taught him how to put on a microphone. Oh. But anyway, it's, you know, people talk about height all the time. Usually what follows is, how tall are you, and then did you play ball? And so I always, my stock response is, yes, and did you play miniature golf? And that kind of brings an end to that. I was sitting in my office February the 27th in 2011, and I was looking at some news. I have a little news program that brings stuff to me, and in that daily news headline, I was scrolling the headlines, and I saw that a man by the name of Frank Buckles had died that day. Now, that name may not mean anything to you, but he died at the age of 110, and he wasn't known as the oldest man. You know, that's not the point. What he was known for is that he was the last American survivor of World War I, which blew my mind. Because you see, I remember, and most of the guys I'm looking at can probably remember hometown parades, where you have veterans parades and you had the soldiers march. Do you remember all that? And I remember growing up, you know, you had the World War I group marching down the highway, and then you had World War II marching, and you had Vietnam War soldiers marching, and it slipped up on me. There are no more World War I veterans. And, you know, you do the math and you say, well, you know, of course, you know, it's been too long. But, man, it just happened like that. It seems like yesterday I was attending parades and these older gentlemen were walking down the middle of the street, 70 years old or so, and now they are all gone. That served to remind me that we are living in a very fast-moving world, and our time here is really short. You know, I grew up with some kind of people that had influenced my life a lot, preachers that I looked up to and had took particular interest in me and helped me along the way. Men like, I think of Winfred Claiborne. Was somebody who helped me while I was in college, and I think of Johnny Ramsey, and Thomas Warren, and Hugo McCord, and I would throw my dad in there as well, men who influenced my life. And you know the thing about all those guys? They're gone. Every one of them are gone. And who's going to step up and take their place? And who are we preparing to fill the gap, the void that is left when one generation passes and hands the torch off to the next generation? You know, Kirk mentioned about Blaine maybe treading on his territory. When Kirk started, I'm thinking, Kirk, come on, man, you're doing what I'm doing here. But, you know, Judges chapter 2 and verse 10, there arose another generation who knew not God nor the works of God. And it just blows my mind. How in the world could those Israelites who have crossed over into the promised land, who had seen the Red Sea part, or had heard, rather, the story of the Red Sea parting, and maybe had witnessed it as children, and crossing the Jordan River and coming into the promised land and those waters dividing, and all the plagues and all those stories that were just like awe-inspiring. As a child, you would have listened to those with, wow, that really happened? And they didn't tell their children that. How in the world could they not have told their own children? They grew up not having a relationship with God, the God of heaven, and they didn't even know the things that God of heaven had done for them. Somebody dropped the ball. And it's real easy to look back to Judges chapter 2 and verse 10 and say, man, what in the world was wrong with those Israelites? Well, what's wrong with us? Because let's bring this home. We're raising illiterate and illiterate generation when it comes to the Word of God. And it may be my house that that passage is talking about as much as any Israelite house from long ago. Who are we training to take the gospel to the whole world? I want to do two things in this time that I have. I want to share with you our responsibility, and then I want to call you to action at a particular thing. But the first thing I want you to understand, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 7, it says that we have this treasure in earthen vessels, that the excellence of the power might be of God and not of man. You know, the reason, why wouldn't God just, when you become a sinner, just whisper in your ear and say, okay, here's what you need to do? Why does he take us? Well, he uses us because no one would believe that we could accomplish the things that he's accomplished. It's like Gideon, you know, 300 men. Well, everybody knows that was not Gideon, that was God. And with reference to the gospel of Christ and its power, it's not because of us, it's because of God and the power of his gospel. But there's a passage in Ephesians 1, 22 and 23 that I want you to take note of as well. Because the passage in 2 Corinthians says, God has given us the responsibility, he's placed in earthen vessels the excellence of the power of God. And in Ephesians 1, verse 22 and 23, there's a passage there you need to consider. It says of God that gave him to be head over all things to the church, which is his body, the fullness of him who fills all in all. Now, sometimes there are words in the Bible, it's kind of like lawyerese, you know, that language, the verbiage, and we do that with the Bible sometimes. We look at verses and we pick out the important stuff. Jesus is head of the church, he's head over all things, the body and the church are the same thing. We get our 2 points and we move on. And the rest of that is just like filler. He's the fullness of him who fills all in all. And what does that mean? It's just like, it's language, verbiage. But that's significant. The church, the body of Christ, is the fullness of him who fills all in all. Listen, Jesus is not complete without us. Not, he needs us, is what I'm saying. And that you almost choke on that, don't you? We can say, "Oh God, I need God. I need Jesus." We're easy. That just rolls off. I have no trouble saying that. But when I say Jesus needs me, that kind of sticks. You know, I'm not sure I'm comfortable saying. Is that blasphemous to say that? Listen, he doesn't need us intrinsically. He existed long before we ever did. He doesn't need me in his nature, but he has chosen to need me to take the gospel to the world. And Jesus will not accomplish his purpose unless you fulfill him, unless you round him out. He's left a chunk for you to do. And if we don't do it, then Jesus' work for many is in vain. God needs us. We need to be people who evangelize. We need to be people who are teaching others how to evangelize. We need to be doing it. We need to be reaching out. What and who and how are you going to pass on to other people what you know about God? What provisions are you making there? If you get nothing else from this lesson, go away with this thought, and it's this: evangelism is not a talent, it's a command, okay? Have you ever heard of anybody saying, Lord's Supper, you know, that's just not my talent. I don't do the Lord's Supper. I don't like grape juice very much, and silent contemplation is just not, you know, up my alley. So I don't do the Lord's Supper. That's not my talent. Who in the world would ever do that? No one would. But how many people say, well, evangelism, that's just not my thing. You know, I'll do a lot of stuff, but I'm not going to talk about Jesus to people because evangelism isn't my thing. God never said it's a talent. He said it's a command. Do it. And we need to be about doing it. And I would no more not evangelize than I would no more not take the Lord's Supper. They're both equally inappropriate. So here's my question. And I'll tell you, get busy and evangelize. Tell somebody about Jesus and make a difference in their life. And you know, it just has that snowball effect, and it gets bigger and bigger and easier, and it just gains momentum. And if I can share a personal anecdote with you, because it was a time before, you know, I was just in high school, and I wasn't real comfortable talking about Jesus with people. And I had a guy on my basketball team, and he lived, well, there was my house, a church building, and he lived on the other side of the church building. And we began talking about the Bible, and we would hang out on my breezeway and talk about the Bible. One day he came down, and I was sitting on the breezeway, and he walked by, and he was holding up a folder, and he said, "Higginbotham, right here's the answer to everything you've been saying to me." And I said, "Where'd you get it? What is it?" He said, "My preacher gave this to me." And I said, could you come over and let's talk about it? And he said, "No, he told me not to show you." Well, I said to him, I said, "Do you really think if that man had truth, do you think, why would he tell you not to share that?" And he said, "Well, that doesn't make sense." And so he came and we shared it. We worked through it. Long story short, he obeys the gospel. He teaches his mom and dad, and they obey the gospel. He taught his two sisters, and they obeyed the gospel. He taught his aunt and uncle that lived across the street, and they obeyed the gospel. He decided he wanted to preach. He went to Freed Hardeman, graduated from Freed Hardeman, got married, has children who are Christians, is preaching in Kentucky right now. His sister also went to Freed Hardeman, met a preacher who preaches in Pacifica, California, and she's a preacher's wife there. And it just, you know, through the years, how many people has he reached? And it goes back to an uncomfortable, awkward high school kid talking to another kid, scared to death, about Jesus. But when you see that ripple effect and how far it goes, it just lights you on fire, does it not? Look at the difference you can make if you'll reach out to people with the gospel, and you never know. When I was growing up, there was a boy I was terrified of. He was the bully in our town and in our school. And when I saw him coming, I'd go the other way. I was afraid. I would never have talked to him about Jesus. But there was a woman who was 65 years old. He was just still in high school. And she asked him for a Bible study. And he said yes. And he obeyed the gospel, and his wife, and he went to the East Tennessee School of Preaching after that, and he's been preaching the gospel in West Virginia ever since then. You never know. The power is in the gospel, and let it have a chance to do its work, and you don't decide for people whether you think they would respond appropriately or not. Here's my challenge to you. My challenge to you is to become a mentor to someone. Just this past week, I drove all the way to Oklahoma City. That was a long drive, and there's reasons for the drive. But I went out there to participate in a preacher training camp. I believe in preaching, and I want to encourage young men to pursue that. And so I drove out there, and I came back, and I was talking about it on social media, and this woman said, "Why'd you waste that much time and resources going out there to train people? Don't you think you should just tell them to rely on God and ask Him for wisdom?" Well, the short answer to that is no. No, I don't believe that. And Paul said in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 2, to take that which he had committed to Timothy among faithful witnesses, and to take that same message and commit it to faithful men who may be able to teach others also. We're instructed to take what we know and share it with other people. We've got to be about that. We've got to do that. And so let me ask you this, and this is where it's going to get, this is probably going to challenge you at this point. Do you have a mentor? Or are you mentoring somebody right now? Now, if you're thinking, oh, let me see, I did, if you don't have a name that comes to your mind like right now, you're not doing about what I'm talking about. You're not doing what I'm talking about. Oh, we all have influence, and we all do good for people, and we all reach out when we can and impact people's lives. That's just part of being a Christian, though. And we do those things. I'm talking about deliberate, intentional, purposed actions that will impact another person. You've got a target on somebody, and you say, I want that person to be someone that I help. Do you have somebody like that in your life? If you don't, I want you to get one. Have you ever, this scattered approach, sometimes you just have to focus in. You know, you can spend your time running here and there and be so disorganized and just hitting this and that, and that doesn't get the job done. Sometimes you have to say, I'm going to work here for a while, and then I'm going to work here for a while. And that's what I'm asking you to do. Don't just do good generally and call it a day. I want you to pick somebody and say, I want to help this man mature. You need to be that person for somebody. There are guys, preachers in my life that are younger than me that I have kind of taken and said, I want to help this person. And I usually have 3 phone calls a week. I'll send books. I'll send, outlines, or we'll talk about problems and how to handle certain problems. But it's not just sporadic. It's not random. It's intentional. And if you'll do that, you'll make a difference in somebody's life. We can go for a broad shot and just touch lives very superficially, a whole lot of lives. But we can decide while we're doing that to pick somebody and say, I want you to learn from me. I want to pass on to you what I know, and then I want you to pass it on to others. That's what this lesson is about, and that's what I want us to call you to do. We need to do more of that. It as has already been mentioned today, it takes work, it takes effort, it's sometimes inconvenient, sometimes it's costly, but it's worth it. You don't ever forget the honor and the humility that we should have in what God has given us. Jesus chose to need us. And that's mind-boggling to me. My children, I would not entrust my children with something of great value because they were too prone to stumble. And so am I. And yet, Jesus said, I want to put the gospel in you, and I want you to take it to the lost. Let's be about that. And let's prepare this generation for a time when we're no longer here. That day will come much quicker than we all realize.